courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand?
You hold my hand!
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Bernie Sanders makes his case for what he calls democratic socialism, even as Elizabeth Warren gains on him in the Democratic primary polls. We'll tell you what Bernie said and what he didn't say. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, and I'm here to talk about Senator Sanders and socialism with that great fan of socialism, Bill McGurn. How are you, Bill?
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Strassel, more of a critic of socialism, I think. Kim, how are you?
Hi, Paul.
All right. So with that advertising in advance, false advertising in advance, let's start right in. Bernie Sanders made a big speech this week, much advertised, that he called a definition of what he means when he says he is a democratic socialist. That's a small D, democratic socialist. And Bill, what did you think of the effort?
Well, first of all, I think that was important you point out democratic socialist, because it reminds us there are a lot of undemocratic socialists, and a lot of the states are undemocratic. So it's interesting, and it speaks to some of the obstacles I think he has to overcome. It's not a word that Americans are comfortable with, right? So I think what he did is try, and I think it was, from his point of view, if he's always had the socialist label, it was not a bad try to link it to the New Deal and more social welfare programs as opposed to the government controlling the industry or the kind of things we usually think of as socialism. It also, remember, I think earlier in the year, he talked about socialism and invoked Sweden and then got rebuked by the Swedish. So this avoids that kind of, public embarrassment too. So I give him credit for the old college try to repackage this in a way that might look more mainstream than it is.
Well, there are a couple things that were striking and I want to get to. One of which is he didn't invoke the Nordic states,
right?
Sweden, Norway, and these others as exemplars of his illustration of democratic capitalism, which he had in the past. And he was rebuked for reasons that we can talk about, because
right.
Sweden is a lot less socialist
right.
than it used to be.
Right.
What he did was he tried to put his brand of socialism in the context of just normal, large D democratic political history, starting with FDR, Social Security, and his New Deal programs, Harry Truman, who proposed essentially universal health care, LBJ, who passed universal health care for the retired in Medicare and for the poor in Medicaid, Barack Obama. So he's trying to, I think, give it a coat of moderation. This is not European, British, industrial age socialism. Karl Marx never made an appearance.
Right.
And neither did a couple of others.
And to make that point, let's just point out he had to adopt a Republican talking point from the 1930s. They always criticized FDR for being a socialist and instituting socialism, which FDR and his group rejected all the time. Now, basically, Bernie Sanders is saying those guys were right. It was a socialist agenda, and that's my agenda.
Is this, Kim, positioning Sanders to be able to moderate his image and messaging for a general election if he happens to win the nomination? He didn't issue this kind of a statement 4 years ago when he ran against Hillary Clinton. So this time, when he's considered to be a more viable candidate for the actual nomination, maybe he's aiming a little bit of this at trying to persuade the general electorate.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think just to I think that could also help him, or it's designed to help him in the primary too. Look, he's certainly got a base of fans out there, the Bernie people, but they're already on board. And you see a lot of Democrats now, currying for how do you get some of the more moderates in the party to come along to you as well? How do you peel those away from a Joe Biden, for instance? And if you make this sound more eminently reasonable, in fact, if you make it sound as though it is the destiny of the Democratic Party, which is very much how he stated it, that, you know, this is what I'm trying to do is continue the work that we've been doing for 70 some years. Then you do make yourself potentially more of a viable candidate to people outside of his usual base.
Right, because one of the raps against him in the Democratic electorate and some of the people is that Bernie can't win.
Right.
He's just going to be too radical. Hillary Clinton tried to make that case in 2015 and 2016, and I think it had an impact. And, you know, while Bernie has that sort of mid-20s in some of these national polls following, he can't break through there. He hasn't been able to break through there. And so I think this is an attempt to take that that label off.
Right. And I think he doesn't have much choice. I thought it was actually a pretty good strategy given that the word socialism is kind of seen as alien in the American context. I mean, if it were as popular as he sort of maintains it is, a lot of people would be embracing it in his own, and they're not, and that tells you something.
Well, so this is—
whether he succeeds is another question, right?
Right. This is, I think, it's in particular older voters who right. have a memory of some other socialist states, right. which brings me to the point, Kim, of one of Sanders' omissions, and that is there was no mention that I saw in the speech of Cuba— no mention of Venezuela, no mention of other failed socialist states. Now, I'm not saying that I'm not trying to tar him with that necessarily, but I'm asking as a strategic point, why wouldn't Sanders have tried explicitly and forcefully in a speech about democratic socialism to particularly point to those failed examples of socialism and say, that's not what I mean. And I want to reject those explicitly and forcefully and don't try to wrap those countries around me. Why not say that?
He should have. And I think it was a mistake that he didn't. But if you look at the broad speech, it didn't work in with his other theme because he did two things with that speech. One was to make his defense of socialism, explain what it was. But the other was to say that it was very important that the country embrace his style of politics now because it's at a crossroads. And he described two roads you could go down, the road he was presenting or the road of what he called unfettered capitalism and authoritarianism. And he was very keen to make it out that all the authoritarians in the world only come from the right wing. And the people that he named in there, you know, were very much, I mean, he went back and even had, you know, the necessary references to Hitler and Mussolini. And then he traced it up and there was no question that it ended with Trump in his mind. And that was the case he made. But if you're out there suggesting that all things bad in the world come from conservative and Republican right-wing tendencies, then I guess you don't go down the road of mentioning Nicaragua's Daniel Ortega or mentioning Castro in Cuba.
Well, that's a mistake. I think that's a mistake. He should. I mean, if you want to come down and show yourself to be reasonable, you want to reject authoritarians of the right and authoritarians of the left. And by the way, you know, what was the Nazi Party?
Right.
It was National Socialist.
Right. Socialist Workers Party. Right.
Right. So I mean, I'm not saying that that is what Bernie is representing at all. I'm just saying that that is what you should reject, that kind of socialist politics, because, look, the problem with socialism is it has ultimately become coercive. It forces you into certain kinds of behavior. It says, the government are going to take the means of production, either if nationalizing industries or in the case of healthcare, that's what Bernie wants, or taking enough through taxes that way they can deploy those resources as government and politicians see fit. And there's a large element of coercion. And just, Bill, on this point, Bernie was asked earlier this week, I believe, or on the weekend, when Medicare for All, would there be exceptions? Could you get out of it? And he said, no one. Now, we know from France, we know from England, we know from Canada, we know from Germany, we know from other states where they have national health care. You can, if you want, opt out and buy private health care. Now, you have to pay the taxes to finance the public system, but you can get private health care.
Right. Well, look, as you point out, that's the necessary component of socialism. It's also why people described some of Obamacare as socialistic, because at the end, it had to have force, the tax, right, to punish people. If you decide not to do what the government says, there has to be a coercion. It's sort of inevitable in these things. And that's where, again, I think people have a negative connotation, and they're right. And he's trying to erase it by he just presents it as a benefit without the coercion, right? It's just all benefits. It's going to be cost-free and, maybe paid for by a few rich people, taxes on them.
Kim, what do you make of the fact that Sanders abandoned his citation of the Nordic states and Sweden as exemplars of his brand of socialism? Because I thought that was notable. He'd used that in the past and not this time.
No, in part because he did get a lot of pushback when he did it in the past, because, as you mentioned, a lot of those states have become a lot less sort of democratic socialistic over the years. They also just have a very different model in a way than what he is proposing here. You know, I always use the example of Norway. I mean, one of the reasons that it can spend the amount of money that it does on social benefits for the public is because it vastly utilizes its natural resources, including producing a lot of oil, which is not something that Bernie Sanders is about at all, especially given his whole climate agenda, which he mentioned a lot in his speech as well, too. So there's that. And I think also, again, it didn't fit in with his goal of trying to moderate this and make it sound as though this was part of a long American legacy and tradition of a Democratic Party rather than something alien and foreign that he is attempting to import here.
Let me cite a couple of facts about socialist, so-called socialist Sweden. It has no inheritance tax. Mm-hmm. They abolished it in 2005. We, as you know, have rates of inheritance tax about 50%. If you include states, it's over 50, certain states. Corporate tax rate. Bill, what do you think the corporate tax rate in Sweden is?
I'm guessing it's zero because you're bringing it up.
No, it's actually 21.4, which is, of course, ours is 21 now. So, Bernie wants to raise our corporate tax.
Right.
But it would be awkward if you were citing Sweden's corporate tax as something to follow. They have private health care option if they want. Right. They have private universal school choice if you want it. And in the last 15 years or so, they privatized the railway network. They privatized all kinds of social services. So Sweden is in some ways less socialistic than Bernie wants America to be.
Yeah, maybe they need a socialist like Bernie to restore the luster to the dream.
If he wants to move there, we will. I'm sure he'd get a good reception. Kim, anything else you note from the Sanders speech? Just one question on that point. I thought it was a portrait of America that was really, really negative. I mean, we are in one big mess, dire straits, and the interesting question is how well that plays and how well that meshes with what the actual state of the country is.
It was a very gloomy speech, and in particular, that whole beginning part where he sought to describe the other path and suggested we were already on the path to authoritarianism, that we ranked up there somewhere with, China or Putin, which was disturbing. But I think the other thing that really jumped out at me is, we mentioned this premise of his democratic tradition. I would love to actually bring back FDR and see what he thought of some of these proposals, because I mean, some of them really are. It was dishonest of a way of Bernie to suggest that this is all just the latest iteration of what Democrats have been doing. I mean, you looked at it, everyone, a guaranteed job with a living wage, completely free healthcare, completely free education. When you start to think about what you would have to do to transform the country and how big of a wrenching shift that would be, that's where I get the word dishonest in suggesting these are pretty radical proposals, and to suggest suggest they're nothing but a continuation of Democratic politics as usual is just not the case.
Well, and one of the hallmarks of the FDR New Deal programs is that they were earned benefits. You worked a life, you got Social Security. You worked through the Civilian Conservation Corps, you got paid. It was in that way a social contract bill.
Yeah, and that's what he's trying. Look, he's trying to revive that because that's a lot less threatening to people. And as you mentioned, older people, most people have a positive impression of FDR as that his programs, whether or not they work, that they help the poor. I mean, I actually think the record's a lot more complicated, but I think that's the political legacy and so forth. And so he's trying to locate himself in that. I think that's a smart thing to do. I don't know whether he can do it. I think having used the word socialism, he's stuck with it.
All right. We're talking about Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand?
You hold my hand!
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel. And let's pivot here to Elizabeth Warren, who has been the Bernie Sanders' major competitor for votes on the Democratic left. They're angling to become the main alternative to Joe Biden, mobilizing progressives inside the party. And Kim, you know, not too long ago, there were a lot of people who were writing off Elizabeth Warren, saying she just wasn't going anywhere. She's been rolling out a policy almost every week, and suddenly, she is in fact gaining. She's showing better in the polls in Iowa, for example, against Bernie, and in some of the national surveys, she's actually close to or edging ahead of Bernie Sanders. And I noticed in the betting markets, which are the people who put money on who they expect to be the nominee, she has now moved past Sanders into second place. As Biden has fallen, she's pretty close to Biden in the odds of getting the election. Now getting the nomination. Now these prediction markets are based on polling and they can change rapidly. But it's fascinating. This is a good moment for Warren because she's rising right on the cusp of the first Democratic debate.
This doesn't necessarily surprise me. If you've ever seen Elizabeth Warren in action, she is a very talented campaigner. She's very fluid when she speaks. She's also an indefatigable campaigner. She has been very busy out there on the road and in the places that really matter in the primary. And I think it really has mattered as well. There's another appeal as well, is that she is a woman. You know, one of Bernie's, you know, lasting problems is that he's an old white guy. And for a progressive movement that very much wants to see that shaken up, the establishment, you know, that is in her favor. But I think the thing that has helped her the most is the policy detail, and, you know, which is at least encouraging to hear. I don't agree with her policies, but she certainly takes it to Trump whenever she gets an opportunity. But she's running on a very economic populist message that government needs exist to rein in bad actors, corporations, and she's very much stuck to that theme, and it seems to be resonating with people out there.
Well, Bill, as a young white guy, how do you feel about that?
I'm not so sure I'm so young. Look, I read a we were just talking about Bernie Sanders, and what's interesting is I'm not sure in substance that his policy proposals are that much different from Elizabeth Warren's. I think she's been shrewder that she doesn't use socialism. She says, I believe in a market economy. Then she never talks about the good aspects of the – then she goes on to say, this is why I should tax it to death or regulate it to death in these areas. But I think it's a shrewd way that she packages. Kim mentioned the plans, which I think she can explain in what sounds persuasive. I think the danger is on the Republican side, people dismiss her because Trump calls her Pocahontas and – She can sound a little shrill, but I think she has a genuine appeal. As Kim says, she explains these plans. There's a piece in Vox by Ezra Klein on her saying she's not Hillary Clinton. She sounds some of the same note, but Hillary Clinton was dogged. And in fact, the reason for the Bernie campaign was as much as she railed against Wall Street and the establishment, people thought she was part of it and that she had I don't think people in the Democratic primaries, the voters think that Elizabeth Warren is part of that.
I also think, Kim, that and Bill, it's interesting, raised the Vox piece. I think that there's a rallying around Warren that you're beginning to see on what I would call the intellectual left, the New York Times columnists, the Vox, Slate, the left wing pundit class. Is warming to Warren because I think, one, they feel Bernie is sort of used goods from 2016. Some feel that Bernie also damaged Clinton, and they resent that, and that's a problem. But I think Kim is focused on the right thing here, which is the ideas. They really like the fact that she's putting hard-edged, progressive ideas for a much larger government control over the economy on the table in a way that if she actually won and took over the Congress, they could really do very dramatic change, maybe even more than Barack Obama did.
Yeah, and especially I think it helps her too. You mentioned the way they look at Bernie, and I think too that that gets to your point about how a lot of those the intellectual pundit class on the left doesn't think that he can necessarily win a general election. So that also, they discount him for that reason as well. But what also helps Elizabeth Warren is, you know, if you look at all the other candidates out there trying to occupy that more liberal space, she's without a doubt the one that has substance. You know, look at some of the other competitors out there that are polling way down in the single digits. I mean, are you looking to Beto O'Rourke for a big policy agenda? What is Cory Booker proposing? What is Kamala Harris really, in fact, proposing in terms of big ideas? And to the extent that they are, some of them are really dramatic on issues that are certainly get a lot of attention. Like, for instance, Booker and I think both Harris came out with their plans for how they would control gun ownership. But I think that pundit class you're mentioning, they're much more interested in the things that are likely to get pushed through. And on the, I think on the economic front, that's always an easier push than on some of these big cultural flashpoint issues.
All right, Bill, last point here. The Democratic National Committee rolled out its debate lineup for June 26 and 27. Going to have two different debates, two separate. It's going to be one debate, considered one debate, but it'll be over two evenings. So you have a lineup of 10 on one night, lineup of 10 on another. They've drawn by random the lineup there. And one of the interesting things is it's going to be Bernie versus Biden in one of the debates. And I think Bernie is looking forward to that because he's going to go after Joe. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see that exchange. And also that they'll also include Pete Buttigieg, who was the mayor of South Bend, and we'll see how he does in that. Warren doesn't get a shot at Biden in that debate. And that may be actually to her benefit where she can just make her case separately from Bernie.
Right. No, I agree. Look, they're all going to be gunning for Joe Biden because he's not only in the front, but he's in the front by a pretty big margin compared to everyone else that follows him. So they're all going to be gunning for him in a way that people were after Trump. Actually, it's even more so because I think in the very first debates, there was a sense, I mean, I know I had it,
in
2016, that Trump was a gadfly and might not last. He would peter out. That's not the feeling about Joe Biden. They know he's a serious threat to them. It's their chance to take him down. And I agree. I will say one last thing about Elizabeth Warren. Though, you know, Trump calls her Pocahontas and so forth, it is notable she was in a recent interview with an African-American host who put her on the spot on this, and she did not answer well. I think he compared her to Rachel Dolezal, the white woman that claimed to be black. She just has to come up with a good answer and just move beyond it. I think she can, but it was notable to me that she hadn't. And it suggests that the attacks may not be just from Trump and the right. It may come from people within the Democratic Party.
As opposed to essentially trying to cultural appropriation.
And the irony is, deep down, I believe that Elizabeth Warren did believe she may have had some Native American blood. Not a lot, because otherwise, why would you take a DNA test, right? If you really thought it was a fraud and you just were claiming this, why would you take a DNA test?
Politicians do strange things, Bill.
They sure do.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with more editions of Potomac Watch.